Hello everyone, I'm Catherine from Millennials in Motion magazine, and this is our fourth episode of Conversations with the Community. Now, October is Black Cat Awareness Month and Adopt a Shelter Dog Month, so we're sitting down with the Animal Foundation today to talk about the organization and how you can get involved with them. So today I'm sitting with the volunteer coordinator, Robin Reed, and Myra.
Hi.
And what is your...
I am the volunteer program specialist.
Awesome. So tell me a bit about yourselves and like what's your position here, like what do you do in your position?
So I'm the volunteer coordinator. I started at the Animal Foundation about 2.5 years ago, and I help create and maintain the programs that connect the community to our organization.
I am Robin's right-hand woman. We work together to create different programs and trainings and everything for the volunteers and working on getting them engaged with our organization. I've been here for just a little over 2 years. I started out in the adoptions department and moved over to the volunteer team.
And have you been in any other departments while you're here?
I also started in adoptions. We kind of started right around the same time. We made our transitions pretty around the same time, but it's a really good entry level into the volunteer community at our organization.
Awesome. Now, have you learned or experienced anything particularly important or that stands out to you through working with the organization?
I always say I never thought I could work with an organization like this. I remember going to the shelter and crying when I was a little girl. So I learned kind of how shelters really operate and how they really do connect to the community. And the reality of that is a little bit different than what I might have thought it was when I was younger. And I'm sure we're going to explore all of those differences and changes as we talk today. But that's really one of the things that stands out to me.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because it's also Mental Health Awareness Month. And I don't think people realize how like taxing it can be in this sort of industry. So what mental health issues are a concern working in this industry, would you say?
We have a very specific syndrome, I guess you might want to call it, called compassion fatigue, that a lot of people working in kind of first responders, medical professions, anytime where you're going to see hardship and things that affect you emotionally can also compound and become part of compassion fatigue. And a lot of people have a tendency to think you're dealing with animals, they're cute and fluffy, you're adopting them out, it's a lot of fun. And they seem to forget that we're seeing animals at their worst. You know, it's kind of like going to the emergency room. It's, you're at your worst day possible. You're scared, you could be injured or sick. And dealing with that type of trauma can cause compassion fatigue over time. And it really, people don't realize that just because they're an animal doesn't mean it doesn't affect you the same way. And it contributes to a very high suicide rate in the animal welfare professions, especially among medical professionals in the animal welfare world. Yeah.
It's really hard to not take some of these animals' well-beings home with you, which compounds because then it leaks into your relationships outside of the shelter because you're seeing all of these things and other people may not quite understand where you're coming from. It's like, oh, it's an animal. Well, it's more than an animal to us.
Right. And like you guys are behind the scenes. So like the people that come and look at the dogs and the cats, and they're
like, seeing all the good ones.
Yeah. They're bagging, but like you guys see the dogs that have just been like abandoned or just brought in by animal control.
Exactly.
And you know, they're in pain. Like you said, they're scared and everything.
Yeah.
What do you guys do to, you know, like mitigate that?
We have done annual seminars with the Humane Society of the United States. We'll actually send out professionals that are trained in compassion fatigue to have conversations with shelter and animal welfare professionals understand what it is so that you don't just start having these type of feelings and not know how to cope with them, and setting up professional and personal boundaries so that it doesn't leak over into your personal life as much. Really, education is kind of the key when it comes to that type of thing. And we try to hold each other accountable as well, to talk to our coworkers and our volunteers and fosters to make sure that everyone's doing okay while they're here.
That's good. Yeah. Do you guys do anything personally for yourselves to you know, keep, you know, your mindset healthy with everything that's going on?
I work out like crazy.
Yeah. That's her decompression time.
Every morning I have my like yoga session, my meditation session, workout, get all of that angsty energy out of, and then ready to come to work.
Yeah, good way to start the day.
I kind of have my own little mantras that I tell myself. Because like I said, I did not think I would ever be able to do this. I thought I would be that person that suffered with compassion fatigue. So I have to give myself my own little pep talk so that if I'm having a bad day, if I'm seeing some stuff I'm not comfortable with, that I can work on having those conversations.
That's good. You have to do self-care in order to give this care to this animal.
Exactly.
You guys do such an exceptional job.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know what the Animal Foundation is, tell me a bit about the organization, your history, when was it founded, stuff like that.
Oh, this is the fun stuff that a lot of people in the community don't realize, that the Animal Foundation has been around since 1978.
Wow.
Started off as a low-cost spay-neuter clinic, just providing services to the public, and then transitioned over to the kind of shelter side of things in 1995, where we took on our first animal control contract for the city of Las Vegas. And then in 2005, we took on our remaining two contracts for Clark County and for City of North Las Vegas. So handled three out of the four jurisdictions in all of the greater Las Vegas area.
That's a big area.
Yeah, yeah. So that brought us up to about 2005. Very quickly realized that we were handling about 52,000 animals per year, which is an astronomically high number. We are considered the largest single-site nonprofit animal shelter in the country.
Wow.
Which is sounds like it's a really great title, but largest is not always best when it comes to something like this.
Right.
Started working on focusing on care and changing what we call best practices in the industry to make sure that we could be the best as well as the largest. And started developing programs to get in line with animal welfare standards in the communities. And in 2015, developed what was called Mission Possible 2020 to bring us into kind of the new age of animal welfare.
So tell me a little bit more about Mission Possible 2020.
It really took us from being a warehousing type of situation where we had 52,000 animals and had to just figure out what to do with them to making sure that we were providing the best care and practices for them. It was both a kind of physical changes in the way that we operated, from everything from like our human resources practices to accounting to animal welfare. How do we actually care for the pets themselves?
So like a complete overhaul of everything.
Yes.
And it wasn't just about what do we do with the animals that are in our care. It's about how can we better the community so that those animals don't have to come to us.
That's awesome.
So kind of working with different organizations, partners, other even random companies that you wouldn't think would want to be part of kind of doing what we're doing, making those partnerships and relationships to get as many eyes and ears out there so that people know, oh, I lost my dog, this is where you gotta go look. Oh, I'm looking for an animal, this is where you gotta go look. I need help with my animal, this is where you can look.
Yeah.
Even if we aren't the physical resource for them, we can help them find those resources.
Yeah.
So what would you say is the current like mission and vision for the Animal Foundation?
That was part of what was developed with Mission Possible 2020, was a clear focus goal for the organization. States that we envision a humane and compassionate community for all animals, and that our mission at the Animal Foundation is to save the lives of all healthy and treatable animals in the Las Vegas Valley. So that we're not just a warehousing situation. We're not just here to care for pets. It's to put that embodiment and vision into every single thing that we do.
And I love what you guys have done with the facility and completely rebuilding it and having all this more space and all these different departments in and out.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people don't realize as well, as or if they've been here in the past, they've seen what we were before. It was a $35 million capital campaign for Mission Possible 2020. So there's a lot of theoretical changes that have happened, but a lot of physical changes. This building that we're in today didn't exist until about February of this year. So it's brand spanking new. Everything has been totally overhauled and changed. So hopefully the community will come down and see those changes in action.
Right, they're gonna drive by and be like, wait.
There was just tents and trailers there
right,
before.
Yeah. Now it's like this big, beautiful facility.
Yeah.
They're gonna wanna get involved. It's just like, what's going on in there?
Exactly.
So what services does the Animal Foundation offer the Las Vegas community besides adopting out rescued animals?
Myra kind of touched on a couple of them. A lot of it is making sure the community understands we're not just an adoptions agency. we don't want animals to ever show up here in the first place. So we talk a lot about preventing animals from coming to the shelter through our outreach and education opportunities, through our lost and found, so that if they do show up here, they know how to come and reclaim their pet so that they don't have to stay here. When I moved, I was amazed how many people were fantastic at social media networking, but they just weren't coming to the shelter and checking our resources. And we want to make sure that they know how to get here. We have some very well-researched programs that are shelter prevention programs. I'm sorry, intervention programs, I should say. Pets for Life and our KEPT program go directly out into the most needed communities to make sure that they know we have low-cost services, that we have these opportunities. And KEPT is one that is one of our favorite opportunities because it makes sure that people who think that the only option is to surrender their pet, they're facing really hard times financially or emotionally, you know, they're fleeing a domestic violence situation, that we can provide low-cost housing to them, that we can provide food to them for free.
That's amazing.
Things that a lot of people just don't know that we do. So the education part, the outreach part is really important. And then, of course, once the animals are here, we have to find a placement for them. We call them positive outcomes. So working with the community for adoptions, for fosters, for rescues, to make sure that even though we can't stop all of them from coming here, we find a place for them all.
How long have you had that program in place where you're working with the community to keep their pets with them?
I'm going to say it's been over the last 5 or 6 years.
Okay. It's still a fairly new program considering we've been around for so long.
Yeah.
But it hasn't really gotten its legs until recently, where more people are starting to talk about it and know that we have the program at all and having kind of a backing for it. The community doesn't realize that a lot of the donations that they give us, they think, oh, it's only going to go to the shelter animals. It's actually going back out into the community through that program.
Yeah. Yeah, any resource we can't use gets repurposed into that program.
Awesome. Now, for being so new, have you seen, like, you know, I don't know if you have the statistics of it or anything per se, but have you seen a huge difference in, like, say, the number of animals that are being, you know, surrendered or anything like that? Have you seen a dip in that?
I don't think I have the statistics right off the top of my head, but yes, we can definitely find those numbers for you. But yes, it does make a difference because, I mean, pretty much every animal that enters in through our KEPT program would have been surrendered had there not been that opportunity. There still are animals that end up being surrendered. The person is not able to reclaim them for whatever reason, but at least gives them that opportunity to try. And the food outreach and supply outreach, just that's hardly, you can't measure that type of impact,
yeah.
You know?
Right. Especially like just to one person, you're changing their entire life.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. I thought I was going to have to, you know, essentially get rid of a family member because we fell under hard times.
Yeah.
Now we get to keep them together. That's beautiful.
Yeah. We have a very open-minded policy when it comes to these type of things. We'll talk about it in the adoptions part of the conversation, but it applies to this as well. We're not here to judge pet owners. We're here to give them the help and resources they need. Everybody handles their animals a little bit differently. We know they love and care about them. They're providing the best they can for them, and we want them to keep providing for them. We don't want them to have to be here.
An amazing thing that I've seen is a lot of people that end up using our program and go through it end up becoming volunteers because of the impact that we've helped them with. So they're like, I don't have the money to physically give you a donation, but I can give you a donation of my time. And so they come back and they start volunteering and kind of helping all the animals that's still looking for a home. So that was really, really cool to see also.
So they're like giving back to you guys
for helping them when they
needed
it.
It's like a paying
it
forward.
Oh, yeah. It all comes back to us. So it's really awesome.
And then you know that they're going to go tell the people, be like, you guys, did
exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Exactly. It's really awesome.
So tell me about like the clinic and what kind of services they provide.
You want to do the clinic?
Sure. They still do the same thing they've been doing for forever. We do offer low-cost vaccines, so dogs and cats, rabies, regular yearly vaccines. We also provide low-cost spay and neuters, and even no cost for our zip codes that our Pets for Life program works with. So there are a vast majority of people that wouldn't be getting their animals spayed or neutered because of the monetary barrier that we try and break down. So whereas you're going to go to a full service vet or another clinic to get these procedures done, or at least ask them how much is it, and you're going to hear $300, $400, $500.
Expensive.
Here, it starts at like $35 for a small animal. So we're trying to break down that barrier, because the more spay and neuters that we get to do, the less likely an unwanted litter is going to come to us. Yeah. So everything is pretty much like an at cost type thing. We're not going to overcharge for any of that stuff because we want them to come to us.
That definitely helps with the problem of pet overpopulation.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you're contracted with Clark County, and that means you have to take in any animal, right?
Yes. We are what's called an open admission shelter. So we have to, if it walks through our door, we have to take it. We will take wildlife as well, but that gets handled by the Department of Wildlife. It'll get transferred over there. But pretty much anything else that is considered a domestic animal, we have to take. We can't be full. We can't not have enough space or enough money to handle the situation. We have to take them all.
And I assume that's when, like, those groups and organizations that you work with come in handy, having those connections.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yes.
Hey, mm-hmm. We've got this weird thing.
What's the weirdest intake or intakes you've ever had?
Oh, all of them. We've had some good ones.
Anything other than a cat or dog?
Yeah.
We've had, I don't know if you've heard, don't know how long you've been in Vegas. There was like a bull in like 2017 or something that was running down Las Vegas Boulevard.
Oh my God.
Ended up with us. Yeah. We've had monkeys, hordes of chickens at one time.
I remember that.
Yeah, we get domesticated pigeons. So all those pigeons you see out there, we get them with the bedazzled little rings around them. So we know that they belong to someone.
Yeah.
Yeah, we get everything, all sorts of weird stuff.
Yeah. I think we had a bobcat that was in our program once.
Yeah.
He was domesticated. He had a collar and everything. So he was definitely somebody's pet.
Wow. But. So like he was caught and he has a collar on. So you're just like,
This is not just a 10-pound little stray cat walking around. It's a bobcat.
So, did you ever get anybody who like had like a pet coyote or anything?
We've had coyote pups that have come in before.
We've had hybrids. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the hybrid wolf dogs we've seen before. 12-foot like boa constrictors, like large exotic snakes. We always joke around, like, if dinosaurs existed and they were domesticated pets, we would be the shelter they ended up at.
No, yeah. I remember, like, when I'd go through, like, the volunteer orientation, they would always, like, use it, like, oh, yeah, if we ever quarantine Mike Tyson's tiger, like, you know, making a joke on the Hangover movie, like, he's coming here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exotic animals are legal in Vegas, so they will end up here.
We've gotten, what's that singer's name? His peacocks. We've ended up with peacocks.
Wayne Newton. Yeah, his peacocks hop the fence all the time.
Yeah, we've ended up with his peacocks, and his people came, and they're like, nope, those are his peacocks, and we sent them right back home.
How often do you get them?
We get peacocks, like, just in general. We get peacocks pretty often, and they always tend to come, like, in, like, groups. It's so weird.
Yeah. So do they travel in, like, a...
There's usually a male and then a couple females with them. Yeah. Kind of keeps them all together. We get large hoarding cases as well. She mentioned the roosters. If there's a fighting operation, we get hoarding cases of cats. It's not uncommon to get 20 to 50 cats at a time. Last year, there was a case of Pomeranians about a year and a half ago.
The ones in the trucks, right?
Yeah.
I was just about to ask, that happened out here, right?
Yep. It was in Clark County. So they were about 164 Pomeranians abandoned in the desert in a U-Haul trailer. So they were in our jurisdiction. They ended up coming to us. So at 3 a.m., we had to figure out what to do with 164 dogs.
Yeah, we got to take care of all of those for a couple of months.
Yeah, Pomeranian is a cuss word now at the Animal Foundation, so we don't speak of them.
So what is the intake process like? Like, how long until an animal is put up for an adoption? What happens to lost animals when they're brought to the shelter?
I think this is probably one of the most misconceived concepts that's out there, because there were a lot of different operating procedures over the years, so we love to clarify this for everybody. We accept any animal that comes into us. Dogs, there's generally a 72-hour legal hold. Cats are 24 hours, except North Las Vegas, which is still 72 hours for some reason. And during that time, we do what's called a tag process. This is our legal hold time to process if they physically have a tag with information on them or if they have a microchip. We run that information. We have dedicated staff members who attempt at least 3 times to contact any listed phone numbers and emails on there. And then if we're not able to reach anybody by the end of that 72 or 24-hour hold time, the animal goes through the adoptions process. We can extend that time indefinitely if we are leaving voicemails back and forth and trying to make arrangements to repay fees or something. So we can extend that. It's not 72 hours and you're out of luck. You know, we'll try to make every accommodation possible. We also handle what are called confiscations. So if there is a legal owner of record, somebody passes away in the home and is transported, somebody's arrested in the home, there's an eviction notice that's executed, nobody's there to care for the pets, they come to the Animal Foundation as well, and we have a 10-day hold process for them. Because we know who they are, we want to give them a little time to get whatever figured out so they can come back and get their pet. Mm-hmm. Again, if they don't get in touch with us or we don't have a way of responding to them within those times, they become available for adoptions then. But any time up until the animals leave our property, it could be a year from now. If you come in and can show proof of ownership, we can return that animal to you. So it's very important that people understand the intake process, that yes, we will get them up for adoption, but you can still come reclaim your pet at any point before they leave property.
Okay. So in Clark County, your pets have to be like spayed or neutered, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what happens when someone's dog, cat, you know, gets out and it makes its way here one way or another? What's that process of reclaiming like?
We call it a twofer. You do have to have the animal spayed or neutered. To meet laws, standards. Usually that same goes for rabies shots as well. And there is a fee associated with that to get the animal reclaimed, to make sure that the surgeries are done. We try to be as flexible as possible. So if it's a financial barrier that you're not able to reclaim the pet because of this, talk to the admissions counselors, talk to the lost and found department. We try to do everything as much as we can.
Yeah, our catch department can step in and help with those fees as well.
So that's the only thing preventing somebody from reclaiming their pet is the cost. We'll try to do what we can. There are certain things we cannot control because we are contracted by those organizations, those jurisdictions. But if we have the power to, we'll try.
That's awesome. So, yeah. I know, like, I've heard a lot of like people like talking about that. They're just like, oh, don't let your dogs get out if they're fixed. Just, well, first off, your pet should be fixed.
Yeah,
that's a whole other situation. Yeah, we can start a rant on that.
They're holding on to my animal. I'm just like,
yeah, I mean, it's pretty.
Just sign the papers and then you'll get them back.
Exactly. There's a reason we do these things.
Right. Because it's for the benefit of the whole community. You know, you're not trying to punish, you know, owners for not, you know, having their pets
exactly.
fixed.
A lot of times it is an education process, though. It's not the way they were raised. They just don't think about spay neuter the same way that animal activists like we do.
Right.
Do. So making sure that they're understanding the reasons we have to enforce these rules
is
important.
And there's a lot of misconceptions about getting your pets fixed too.
And it's really interesting because it comes from a lot of men, of course, that are like, oh, I would never do that to my boy. I don't want them to do that to me. And on an animal side is they don't realize that it's actually healthier for them to get fixed because then they're not dealing with possible testicular cancers and all this other stuff. And same thing with a female, like she's less likely to have cancers if she's fixed versus if you don't. And even if you never breed her, it's still very prevalent in dogs that aren't fixed.
And isn't there an effect on their like behavior as well?
Especially in the males, it depends on each specific animal, but higher levels of testosterone, if you were to have two unaltered males, you're more likely to have a behavioral situation. Female cats, if you've never heard a female cat that goes into heat, it will not be a happy situation in your household if you have feral cats in the neighborhood. Yes. So it can keep the peace in your home as well. Yeah.
So you guys clearly do a lot for the community. What other misconceptions about the shelter, animals at the shelter, or animal rescue in general that you haven't already hit on that you'd like to mention?
One general thing, I mean, there's a bunch of specific things we can talk about, but one general thing is that a lot of people just don't understand the sheltering process. They think that because we're not necessarily considered a no-kill organization or we're a high intake public shelter that we're over here just, you know, euthanizing animals left and right and that we take some sort of joy and that's what we want to be doing. That is absolutely not who we are. I think we want to make sure that the community is aware of the extremely compassionate people that work at these shelters,
right,
and how difficult it can be for them to be put in this situation. So making sure that the community is aware of who we are, what we offer, utilizing our resources. And I get a lot of people that say, well, I would never support an organization like that. I would never support like a something that's not a no-kill organization.
So how do you get them in the direction of being a no-kill shelter
if you don't support them?
Exactly. Yes. And that's the huge thing that people need to realize is the more you support those not no-kill shelters, the more animals get positive placements.
Yeah.
So you're helping the animals, and that's what you ultimately want to do is you want to help the animals that are in the most dire need. Yeah, so if you help those types of organizations, that's how they get closer and closer to that no-kill status.
Right. Because you guys are a nonprofit. You guys rely on the community support, their donations to fund what you guys do.
Absolutely. Yeah. And for the volume of animals that come into our shelter, we're, like she said earlier, we're the largest single-site nonprofit shelter in the whole United States. Our live release rate for healthy and treatable animals is still 87%. So we're 3% away from that status that everyone is so interested in. Yeah. That number is amazing. We don't ever necessarily care to be called a no-kill because that it's been tossed around like a bad word now, which, you know, it served its purpose, and we absolutely still want to make sure that every animal that comes into our organization is found, you know, a positive placement, but we're also not going to sacrifice that, you know, that number for a dangerous animal or an extremely sick animal, that the only humane thing to do is to help it, you know, go on to the past the Rainbow Bridge, because it's inhumane to just keep pumping them with drugs or whatever just so that they stay alive. Like, it's not a humane practice for them.
Right, or like a dog or a cat who's not doing well in the shelter environment and its mental health is deteriorating.
Yeah.
And it's just in the corner, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, or it's...
Get away.
Yeah, its mental state has deteriorated so bad that it's now hurting itself. Like, that's still not a way to live. We're always going to reach out to rescues and to other organizations that could possibly take that animal out of here and hopefully rehabilitate it. But it's not always a possibility because those other organizations do have to say at some point, oh, we don't have the funds or we don't have the backing or we don't have the fosters to help us. So we're always going to find every other avenue possible before coming to that ultimate decision. And we don't take that decision lightly at all.
Yeah, it's a very hard decision to make.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with, like, even though you have, like, a very high percentage of, you know, getting animals out of the shelter, like, it's still, having to put any animals down is hard.
Oh, yeah.
But, so that volume of having to go through that on your level is even more, you know, detrimental to, you know, how you're feeling about it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So what breeds of dogs do you see most often populating the shelter?
I think this is also one of those misconception things. When we do our volunteer training, we show a video of the behind-the-scenes portion of the shelter, the 72-hour hold side, and then you see the animals that are down in adoptions, and there's a notable difference there. So as an open admission shelter, we do get every single breed that's ever existed. We've had it here for sure. Yes, that means, you know, the purebred dogs, the cute little fluffy dogs. We've had purebred cats before, and Bengal cats and Persians. But usually a lot of what you see are the bully breed mixes and the smaller Chihuahuas and then just general cats, you know. Cats are cats as far as we're concerned, for the most part. It's just the length of the hair that we measure. But on the dog side, definitely the bully breeds and the smaller dog Chihuahuas we see very high populations of.
Do you think there's a particular reason why you see such a high population of those particular dogs?
Statistics, I mean, nationwide or pretty much any metropolitan area right now, those are the two highest breeds you're going to see. And just like every generation has had what they deem to be, you know, their aggressive generation dog, their bad reputation type of dog, it was German Shepherds and then Rottweilers and Dobermans, and now it's up to the Pit Bull, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. They're a very powerful breed that people have misused. Which in a way makes them desirable, but then you get the compassionate people that understand the breed and really see the benefit of them as well. But anytime there's a higher population in the community, we're going to have a higher population here. It's one of the reasons that we do a lot of education on that type of breed as well. One thing we do at the shelter is that we do not put breed restrictions on any of our animals. So if you adopt a pet from us, it will always say mixed breed. Even if it looks like 100% pit bull, it's going to say mixed breed because right. Pitbull isn't a breed.
Yeah, it's like a misnomer.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's 20 yeah. different breeds that fall under that category.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Now, I remember when I went to the volunteer orientation, they had like, you know, a presentation slide and it was just, it had like, yeah, like 20 different dogs and it's just like,
which one?
Which one? And I just like,
they all look the same in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's that's what people,
it's, yeah, and it's all just these different little, like, body and facial characteristics yeah. that people are like, oh yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
When we've gotten grants to do DNA testing just to kind of like play with it and see what these dogs are, dogs that we were like, oh yeah, that's 100% a Staffordshire. That is absolutely a pity. And then it turned out that they were like Chow Chow and like Great Dane and yeah. Shar-Pei.
Like
and
you're a just like Argentino.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're like, yeah. What? Where did the Chow Chow come from this? I don't, but yeah. Yeah, like, so you can't really just take things at face value. There's definitely all sorts of DNA mixed
yeah.
in there.
Yeah. And our goal to promote adoptions is to have people, you know, meet the individual animals,
right.
fall in love with the individual animal. And then if you want to do a DNA test and find out, sure, that's fine. But we also don't mm-hmm. want to prevent them from finding housing because there are a lot of really strict HOAs out here
yeah.
that would limit an animal from that situation. I actually saw a foster return an animal yesterday and he was in tears because he loved this dog so much and his HOA was going to have him pay $1,000 security deposit. And he's like, I have to be here another 6 months. I can't. And it was a grown man crying over this adorable dog and looking at the dog, having worked with this breed. Yeah, he probably did have some Staffordshire Terrier. I would almost guarantee he was not 100%. And I, being the activist that I am, would probably DNA test him and fight my complex, but not everybody can afford to do that, you yeah. know? So we try to go the educational route in working with the community to know that these are really great animals still. Last year we had a photographer, a very well-known photographer, Sophie Garmond, mm-hmm. who came to us. She does the flower power for pitties with like the little head crowns.
Yeah.
So
pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she did some photography projects with a bunch of our animals. We made a educational handout to give to the public and to our staff and volunteers to kind of awesome. Dispel some of the myths of the pit bull.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are by far, I mean, I don't think you'd find one staff member here who is not a fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're yeah. amazing.
I love working with them. I would always come down and be like, I'm walking the pit bulls today because no one else is
yeah.
taking
yeah.
them. Everyone oh, wants yeah. to take out the cute little dog.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I want to take out these
yeah.
dogs.
They're sweet running. Babies.
I know.
Yeah.
They are. So as I mentioned earlier, it's Black Cat Awareness Month. So I wanted to ask, do you see a higher number of black-coated animals that are not being adopted due to superstition, omens, stuff like that?
With cats, yes and no. It's so weird because some black cats will tend to be here a little bit longer. But what I love seeing and what has been happening more and more is people will come specifically for black cats.
Is it because of Black Panther?
Because, I know, right?
Right.
It's no, possible. But they are very much like, oh, I know this cat's going to stay here if I don't adopt it. So, like, give me all the black cats.
Yeah. Mr. T'Challa.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like, and they're so cute. Every single black cat I see, I'm like, toothless, toothless, toothless.
Yes, all of their names, yes.
All of their names.
Yeah.
No, my roommate's got a black cat from you guys.
Awesome.
His name is Tuck, and he's the nicest cat yeah. ever. And when I was younger, I had cats. They were mean. I was just like, I don't think I like cats very much. And then I met their cat. I was just like, I want a cat so
he's
bad.
Awesome. Yeah.
It's so funny nice. Because before I started working here, I was like not a cat person whatsoever. I was like, dogs are my thing. Cats are really negative. No, thank you. Keep that over there. And then I started kind of working here. Robin helped me a lot with like, no, hold this cat. Look at this cat. Like, check out this cat's personality and to see all the different things. And then I started kind of like doing a little bit of research and seeing like all of their energies and all these different things that cats bring. And to see that black cats actually have the like highest like positive energy output. And I was like, black cats are the best.
Yeah. Yeah, I have yeah. a 22-pound Black Panther at home.
Oh, he's
huge.
Amazing.
He's awesome. And I adopted him because he needed a home. You know, somebody's litter, somebody's backyard cat had a litter of kittens. I was like, I don't really like black cats that much, but I guess I'll adopt him. He really needs help. And after that, I'm like, all right, you guys are pretty cool.
I wouldn't yeah. want a little panther.
Right, exactly. Yeah. They're awesome little panthers.
That's so cute.
He's crazy, but it's fine. But statistically here, I mean, I'm sure we could have some statistics. We prefer probably not to think about them. We just advocate for all of them. In the dog world, we actually see more gray pitties. Gray pitties stay here the longest.
Really?
Yeah. I think just because they're very generic and there's a bunch of them. So in the cat world, I think black is probably the color, but in the dog world, gray pitties definitely kind of have the worst stigma.
Interesting. Now, I just remember like seeing something about those talking about how like these animals are the most likely to stay in the shelter, most likely to be put down, and everything. Yeah. I was just like,
I think it's probably just the volume of them, you know?
And even if people come for like an older dog or a bigger dog or something, they still want to see a unique feature where gray and black dogs, like that's all you get. Like people.
Which is awesome.
I know. I always like, let's hang out for an hour and let me see who you are type thing. But lots of people, like they want to find like that like little unique feature for everybody, you know, that they're walking past to go like, oh, that's a really cute dog.
Yeah.
Instead of just like,
yeah,
this is my dog and he's amazing.
All right. So so we touched on pet overpopulation as being a huge problem and relating to how many animals that you guys get at the shelter. What do you think like the primary causes of pet overpopulation are besides like not getting your pets spayed or neutered?
That is the primary reason for pet overpopulation, yes.
Breeding, overbreeding,
backyard breeding.
Backyard breeding, all of that kind of stuff too. Especially because then if they have an undesirable puppy, like they're not going to sell it or they don't have a way of doing anything with it, so it ends up here. Like,
Right.
Backyard breeding, I mean, aside from the obvious of spaying and neutering your pets, that kind of makes sense. I mean, Bob Barker has been advocating for that since the 80s, you know, and that's why we have laws and regulations now. But especially in metropolitan areas, Vegas is pretty bad for this as well, is the backyard breeding situation. Everybody wants a puppy, which is great. Puppies are awesome. They're really cool. But especially in those populations of our highly overpopulated animals, the chihuahuas and the pitties, they have large litters of puppies. I mean, pit bulls can have up to like 12 dogs in a litter, which is astronomically high for one female having that many animals. And unfortunately, people use them as a money-making operation. You know, that's how they fund themselves, and they're not going through proper channels to make sure that they are getting treatments that they need, getting vaccines. And it leads to a lot of other issues than just overpopulation. The undesirable animals will get dropped off here, and we know there's a breeder out there somewhere where those other pets are getting rehomed irresponsibly, and we ended up with like three blind mastiffs last year.
Or like they're you know, mating animals that like their genetics should not be going together, or they're like ancestral or something like that.
There's a lot of problems that come with it, but a lot of it is, yes, you have the irresponsible backyard breeders, but then you have the accidental situations where people just don't have the education on, you're like, oh, she's so pretty, I just want to be able to have one litter. Like, that one litter can literally kill your pet, you know, from the medical conditions that come along with it.
Right.
From, oh, I just haven't gotten around to getting her spayed yet. Like, there's a lot of problems that come around. I saw an old gentleman at one of our last events who came in with an emergency situation. It's called pyometria, where the animal, the uterus fills with bacteria and disease and can literally rupture and kill the pet. It's a 7-year-old little poodle. And he's an elderly gentleman who didn't have a lot of money. Humane euthanasia probably was going to be the best choice for that animal. And that's a decision that we never want someone to have to come to when there are so many other options to get that pet taken care of ahead of time.
Right.
Yeah.
And do you see like a lot of like designer dogs or like weird mixes that probably
should have a lot of weird mixes.
Noodles and those things. And
yeah.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, anything that's considered a purebred is not an animal that I would generally adopt. Yes, there are responsible, high-caliber breeders out there, but for the most part, they're inbred, and nobody is doing... nobody's doing that genetic testing. Nobody's looking at what actually is happening. They're siblings, they're relatives of some sort, and you're getting those recessive genes that are causing all sorts of medical problems. We were just talking about it earlier that sometimes you get a little bit of that Heinz 57 mix in there, and what is a genetic problem for some purebreds gets worked out because it has other genes to kind of counteract some of it.
Right, like is, aren't like mutts technically like supposed to be fairly healthy?
Yeah. So a mixed breed dog is more likely to stay healthier and live a longer life than a purebred dog. They're not having to deal with all of the medical issues that a purebred dog has to deal with. So like she was saying, it's one of those, the all of the muddiness of it literally will kind of like kick out all of the normal genetic diseases or the genetic
predispositions
that a purebred dog would have to worry about. So if you're getting a purebred German Shepherd, you know that he's going to end up with joint problems, with hip dysplasia, and all of these things. If you end up, you know, with a German Shepherd that's got some other breeds in it, you're less likely to have to deal with those things. So I'm always like, the muddier the better.
And I remember I was here once, and I obviously, like, I don't know for sure, because we probably didn't do like the actual testing on it, but it said like German Shepherd dash hound mix. And yeah. it was like kind of like the size of a German Shepherd with a long, thin sausage body. And I was just like, oh, yep. You poor thing. You're gonna hurt so bad when you're like 6 years old.
Yeah. Right. Oh,
it was super cute, and he was like super excited to, you know, be there and be with all the people, but it's just like, oh, you poor baby.
That's what my sister's dog was. He looked like a full-body German Shepherd, just a little lighter color, but he had the legs of a corgi, you know, like little club feet sticking out. So you know he was a mixed little mutt, but he was a dang healthy dog, except for those little feet, you know?
I know. Right. I'm still trying to figure out. I got him from the shelter way before I started working here. He was labeled as a Basenji mix. So he's supposed to be this long, slender, like derived from Africa dog. He has the coloring, all of that stuff. He has the ears, but he is most definitely like mixed with a Pitty and probably like a Corgi or Basset Hound or something. He is the weirdest looking dog, but he's so dang adorable. And like, he's got the little flipper like feet that just stick out, but they're small and oh gosh, he's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, next question. What kind of donations does the shelter need most? Besides, like, monetary donations to fund what you're doing.
A little bit of everything. We have an Amazon wish list on our website. So, if you go into the website and look for ways to give back and ways to help, it will have a wish list for Amazon on there. So we update it every couple months. You can donate things that you probably didn't even think that we necessarily needed. Like our department has Gatorade on there because our volunteers are outside all summer. But we have everything on there, from animal food to radios to ladders and Gatorade. And then we also have like an ongoing list of things that we're in need of. Some of the really common ones, peanut butter. We use them to make our enrichment toys. So we go through a ton of peanut butter.
I assume peanut butter without, was it xylitol and xanthan
So we look like for the decent stuff still.
Yeah.
Because that's bad for dogs.
Yeah, exactly. Don't do that.
Blended peanuts.
Yes. We also use a variety of different brands of food to provide those enrichment toys. So we have a contract with a food provider. So any donation that is different gives them a little bit of variety in their diet. So we need soft pate food to mix that together. Cats are notoriously picky eaters, so they don't always like our lovely little contracted food, which is very high quality. But they prefer the Friskies or Nine Lives or Iams or something. So any of those type of donations come into the shelter for use.
Enrichment toys like Kongs, we use them every single day for our dogs and we rotate them. So we go through lots of Kongs.
Hundreds.
Yeah.
On a daily basis.
Linens, of course. We'll take even newspaper. We use them for our bunny rabbits. We use them for our cats that are in their holding areas.
Yeah.
So something that you get, you know, every Sunday, just bring us that little stack once you're done with it.
Good.
Does the need for certain donations change throughout the year? Like, you know, during the cold winter months, you probably need more blankets and towels and stuff.
Yeah.
Do you need anything else specifically during the winter months or during the summer months specifically?
Actually, during the summer months, we need those kiddie pools.
Oh, okay.
We use them for some of our dog socialization play areas, but they do get beat up pretty quick. So they're kind of a one season and done type of thing. But yeah, definitely kiddie pools. I mean, think about it. Even a hose we could use as a hose that fills that water source. They get kinked up. They get damaged. During the winter, we take a lot of donations of small dog clothing. So they're super cute. But also to help keep some of our smaller dogs warmer. The shelter floors are all heated. but those little dogs get real shivery. A strong breeze will just blow them over. So as they're coming out to socialize and meet our guests, that portion is still done outside. So we try to keep them bundled up and warm. So you'll see us switching out their little uniforms throughout the winter months. So they're adorable. So yeah, send us cute clothes too. We'll totally take that.
So besides donating to the shelter, how else can people like get involved more directly with you guys and help you guys out?
Definitely through volunteering and fostering. In addition to on the donation side though, you can also become what's called a Kennel Club member. So if you do a certain size donation throughout the year, you'll get your name on a plaque that's attached to a kennel. You get updates on the animals that are in there. So lots of ways to financially give. But other than that, your time and your experience as an animal advocate is very important. The volunteer process, which is what we do, starts off with just a training class, and then we get you into non-animal handling tasks and animal handling tasks, and just being an advocate in the community. The foster process really helps us get animals out of the shelter, and you do the care for them in your home rather than coming to the shelter to care for them. So both of those are great avenues to do that.
So what, is the volunteer like process like, and like what kind of like particular programs do you have that different people might be either interested in, or like maybe if they have a particular skill set, like maybe they know how to train dogs or something like that?
It's a really pretty easy process, thank goodness. We have an application on our website. You sign up for your volunteer orientation. You take that, and then if you want to start doing anything that's non-animal handling, every single department in our organization can use a volunteer, whether it is stuffing mailers for our development department, getting packs together for our foster department so that they can send animals out on foster field trips, or just fostering in general. Our enrichment team uses volunteers to help us clean and stuff all of those Kongs that go out to the animals. Every single department can use a volunteer's help. So whatever anyone's skill set is, if you come to me and you're like, oh, I know how to sew some stuff, like what do you need sewn? We will take you, because we can have you help us kind of make blankets or, you know, different things out of donations that we already have to fit our cat kennels or our dog kennels, any of that stuff. You do an animal handling class for the dogs, a cat animal handling class for the cats. We do have different tiers for the dogs as well, so you don't have to worry about, you know, starting out and you have to go and take out this like super, super rambunctious and high energy dog if you're not ready for it. You start off with the dogs that we know are a little bit calmer, a little bit leash trained, or kind of, you know, will take direction a lot easier. And then once you've built up so many hours, you can start taking training classes to help us train the dogs with leash manners, with simple, like easy obedience stuff. We train the volunteers to then train the dogs. We have an ACE program, which is the Canine Good Citizen. So we have dedicated staff members that train volunteers, and you get yourself a dog and you work that dog 3 days a week. And then you kind of go through that whole process with them and hopefully, you know, get them certified and get them, you know, have their little vest on and show that they're a good canine citizen. Some of our volunteers have been like super dedicated to this program, and it's amazing to see this dog that was super high energy, super, you know, just rambunctious, become like the most good boy ever, like sitting calmly. They let go of the leash. That dog will not move until they tell them to come back to them. It's an amazing thing to see.
Yeah,
that's awesome. And then what's the fostering process like?
So fostering is amazing. Myra and I are both fosters. It's a pretty simple process as well. On the website, same place, you fill out your volunteer application. There's a separate section for fostering. They're going to ask you a little bit more about your home life instead of just getting to know you. And then you get put into an email list, basically, and you'll be notified when there's foster animals that are in need of care. This could be anything from, you know, a litter of kittens that are underage, that doesn't have a mom, or maybe they do have a mom, to behavioral situations where a dog is suffering from that mental type of anxiety we were talking about. Usually if you see an animal that's listed for foster behavior, it's fear-based. So they need somewhere quiet to go and decompress. And then hopefully be able to come back to the shelter and get adopted more easily. That's always the goal, is that whether it's behavioral or medical, they'll be able to recover from that situation in a home setting, come back to the shelter, and be adopted. We have some really new additions to the foster department that are cool, that make it so that the animal doesn't have to come back to the shelter. We know that that's where most animals are getting exposed to diseases. This is where they're most fearful. So we developed what's called the Foster Ambassador Program, where we can actually train the fosters how to complete our adoption process. We still get everything data-wise run through the Animal Foundation database, but you execute the training and the adoption of that animal, and then the animal doesn't have to come back to the shelter except to have their surgery. It really helps prevent the stress in foster pets. And it allows us, I mean, another person that's trained to do that process, we can adopt more animals more easily that way. There's a lot of great fosters that have a ton of community connections to other people. Like, I'm not from Vegas. I really don't know a whole lot of people here. But I get my foster, a Vegas local who's great at social media networking. They will find homes for 25 kittens in 2 weeks. It's amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And it takes a lot of pressure off of the organization and our space limitations here. So it's really fun. We also have an online database of searchable animals that are in need of foster care. So you can always just go online and say, hey, I've got space for 2 kittens right now. These guys are ready. I'll take them. Send us an email. We will get them ready to go home with you.
Cool. And even if you don't have space in your home, but you're like, I want to help an animal, we now have a foster field trip program where you can check a dog out like a library book. You still sign up to be a foster. You come in, any of the dogs that are available for adoption. We usually try and reserve this for the medium to large dogs that really need to get out of the shelter for a little bit. You can take them out, take them on a hike. You can take them to Lazy Dog, you know, spend the day with them and then bring them back before we close that evening. And now you've been a foster doggy chaperone and you've taken them out. You get them exposed to more people. You can let people know that this dog is available through the Animal Foundation, get contacts that way. So now this dog has gone out to places where they wouldn't have normally gone out or seen people where they normally haven't been, you know, would have gotten seen, and possibly get them adopted that way as well.
Oh my God,
and it's just a great mental break for them. So
take some dogs on some hikes now.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it's so fun.
Yeah, it's great for people who don't, like, I have cats at home. I can't bring a dog home overnight, but we can definitely go to Starbucks and get a puppuccino and hang out for a day.
Yeah.
You know? So it's just one more avenue into the community.
Yeah. Cool. Do you guys have a lot of foster fails?
We do. Don't look at me like that. I am strong. My boyfriend, on the other hand, is very weak. He thinks that, like, oh, it's not a cute kitten. It's not going to get adopted. We should keep it forever. It's not true. We shouldn't keep it forever, but we did. So, yes, we do have a high percentage of foster fails. Somebody else has a really great name for it. It's not a foster fail. It's like a foster forever or something like that.
Oh.
It's very cute, but we all fail.
That's a nicer connotation.
Yeah, exactly. So, yes, we do get that. We really try to discourage our fosters from doing that too much, especially if they're brand new. Get a couple rounds under your belt first, just because we want them to continue to foster.
Right.
But ultimately, if a foster becomes an adopter, that's still a positive placement for that animal.
Right.
So that's great. So
I always use the mantra, goodbye is the goal, goodbye is the goal, goodbye is the goal, because if not, we would definitely have multiple extra animals. And then we share a Facebook group with our foster department. So whenever these new fosters are like, how do I do it? They're like in tears. I can't let this animal go. And so we just kind of remind them, like, hey, you're doing an amazing thing. The only way to keep doing these amazing things is to let the poor little animal go.
If you love it, let it go.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the more animals you get healthy and you find homes for, the more animals that you get to help. So it kind of puts everything back into perspective for them. Like, oh yeah, this is why I'm doing it.
Yeah.
So hopefully that helps with a little bit. But
you get to meet more different animals.
Yeah. But yeah, you're always going to find your little soul animal in at least one of the animals that you foster. So if you're fostering 100 animals and keep one, I think that's okay.
Yeah, still success.
Yeah.
What would you say is the organization's greatest accomplishment or accomplishments so far?
I think our growth and change has been some of our greatest accomplishments. Knowing where we were, you know, in 2010, 2005, when we were at the height of those 52,000 animals per year. We currently sit between 28 and 30,000 animals per year. So we've already made really great strides. When I was first doing research on the organization and thinking about getting hired here and thinking back to shelters that I never thought I could work at, that's what I was most impressed with, was the amount of change that has already come and about how transparent the organization actually is. We're not keeping secrets. We're not telling somebody something. All of our statistics and data are online, so you can see the growth and change, the good and the bad, which really helped me make my decision in getting here. So I think that is some of the best progress, and knowing on the inside as to where we're headed for the future, I think is kind of what drives us to be better.
Beautiful. What would be the greatest challenge or obstacle that is currently hindering the organization?
To put this politely,
misconceptions.
Yeah.
Really, that's all it is. People thinking that we're still the shelter of yesteryear, or we're like every other shelter, that, you know, we're people too, and we care deeply about these animals. And no, a dog isn't going to be euthanized just because we don't have a space for it, or just because, you know, XYZ, they've been there for 3 days, they're going to get put down. That's not the case at all. It's been 3 days, their owner didn't come for them. Now we're going to evaluate them medically, behaviorally, and make them available for adoption or transfer. So just kind of people not completely understanding how the shelter process works, and kind of getting that out there is like, we are absolutely animal people. We're not here to obviously make money, because we're a nonprofit, and we're not here to hurt any animals or hurt families that have lost an animal. Like, we want to give these animals back. We want to find all of these animals positive homes to go to, so we can, you know, go home to our animals and feel like we've done something worth doing.
Yeah. I think the community connection portion of that is also very important, in the fact that we are a public shelter. We are here because of the community. Unfortunately, public shelters have gotten the reputation of, if there's a problem, it's the shelter's fault. If there's not enough space, it's the shelter's fault. If there's a high number of euthanasia, it's the shelter's fault. And to an extent, there are programs and everything that can grow and be better, but it's all driven by the number of animals in the community that are in need, that are lost, that need to find placements, you know? So making sure that the community doesn't just know who we are and what our resources are, but that they become the best pet owners they possibly can, so that they don't end up in the shelter to begin with, that they don't need to use our resources as much. So yes, fix the misconceptions about the shelter itself, but make sure people understand, we kind of say it's like all of us for all of them, and that it takes a village to raise a child. It's the same concept for us. It takes everybody in the community, not just the shelter operations, to support our animals.
So just like continuous education and outreach.
Yes.
And just constantly trying to build on that and branching out.
Yeah, even just things like we're doing today, having a conversation with people is one of the best things you can possibly do, because you'd be amazed how many people are like, oh, I just didn't know that.
I learned stuff about you guys, and I've been, doing stuff with you guys for years.
Yeah, it's always something new to learn.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier you do stuff with, like, other organizations and businesses. Are there any in particular that you want to, like, mention or hit on or anything?
We are always doing something with partnerships. Yeah. Always. That's the only way we operate as such a high-volume donor type of situation. This Sunday, which you may not have this posted by then, but we always have an event similar to this. We have a thing called the Bow Wow Hoedown. It's partnered with Downtown Summerlin. It's like a little fall festival. We'll have prizes and events and all that type of thing. But all the businesses of Downtown Summerlin are supporting the efforts there.
We've partnered with Bark Andre Furry and Sir Winston the Doodle, that are huge VTK dogs. And Bark for a Cause is going, like, we're basically kind of sharing this awesome partnership, and all the proceeds for everything that's going on will come to us and to them. So that's a really fun thing. And working with different organizations like that. We have, car dealerships that have yearly or even bi-yearly events for us. And they're like, bring all your dogs, because, we have this huge lot and we're willing to you know, throw on these big events and stuff, and helping promote our organization in places where, you know, we're far north. If we can get a place in Henderson or in Summerlin or near Centennial, to place it, you know, go out to the people that don't necessarily either want to or know that we're over here, it helps a lot with the community outreach too, because now they're like, yes, we actually service your area, even though you're, you know, 45 minutes away.
Yeah.
Kind of getting our animals out to them, and our word out to them, so that they know who we are and what we do and all the amazing animals we have available for them.
Yeah.
Do you guys still do stuff with PetSmart and doing adoption days with them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. PetSmart, Petco.
All of them. All the places. Yeah.
All the pet places.
Yeah. So yeah. You'll definitely see us on the weekends. We have a new partnership at a PetSmart in Summerlin on Charleston, called, it's a cat pop-up. So they have this really cool collapsible cat adoption area that we just pop it open. We bring 5 or 6 kittens, bring them in there. So we don't have to have a physical facility at all these locations. So they're always looking for innovative ways to make it easier for their connections to have adoptions, basically.
Yeah, it's really cool. We even have partnerships with like dispensaries and stuff where they open up their like little lobby area, and we put crates out and have dogs and cats there, and
that's
people
so
love
cool.
going to the adoption. Those have been some of our more successful adoption events, where like all of our animals get adopted.
I love it.
It's so fun.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, if anything, we're getting to the point where we have too many opportunities. We have to start training our volunteers to process the adoptions at those events, so that we can be in 3 places on 1 weekend. Mm-hmm. So yes, definitely. If anybody in your network has opportunities like that, we love those type of partnerships. We're just trying to get up to speed and be able to process them all at once.
Yeah.
Can different organizations and businesses come volunteer with you guys?
Yes.
Yes. We do have a visiting volunteer group opportunity. What a lot of people don't realize is that, unfortunately, it does not actually involve animal handling. So we want to be very upfront with that. But there's a lot of other things that go into making an organization run. Since we hit Mission Possible 2020, we have this amazing new facility. The old standards still apply, though. People don't want to come to shelters because they're not pretty. They don't smell as good. They don't have a janitorial staff taking care of everything 24 hours a day. So we need support from group organizations that can help us clean windows, mop floors, you know, do landscaping work, build our enrichment tools that we need for our animals. So most of those opportunities are comprised of activities like that, but we always make sure we save a little bit of time at the end so they can walk through the facility, visit our animals, we'll do kind of a little educational chat, and then they're prepared to become full service volunteers. If those corporate groups or philanthropy groups want to come back, we kind of expedite them into the volunteer process so they can start handling animals a little bit faster.
Cool. So like a couple people can come down and like not do the orientation, have mm-hmm. to go through all that, mm-hmm. but they can still help you guys out.
Yeah. Yeah. You do some service. You kind of do service learning, where you learn on the job for that session, and then you're ready to go if you want to come back regularly. If not, you've still provided a great service for us during that time you were here as a group. And it's a lot of the educational portion, the kind of conversation we're having today, making sure that they know how to take that information back to the community. So even if they never adopt, they never volunteer, they never foster for us, they still know who we are and can have those conversations with their community of people.
Fantastic. One question I forgot to ask earlier when we were talking about the volunteering in general. Do you still need people who do like photography for the animals, or do you have like somebody set aside who does that and that's their job?
We're always growing those type of opportunities. Definitely, even if it's not specifically photography, media has become such a large part of our organization and just the world in general right now, that we are always in need of media volunteers. So if you have like a confident public speaking scenario, if you want to be on the news, we do weekly and bi-weekly news segments where we need somebody that we can animal train, but then you can go have a conversation with a newscaster and be on TV. Or even just volunteers that we can train to have conversations like we're having today, so that we can have a wider network to spread that word. Definitely are looking for those type of people. The photography, we're growing a little bit too. So if it comes packaged together, that's even better.
So, like, but do you need people who, like, go down and take pictures of the animals for your website?
Currently, we do have a very dedicated volunteer, bless her. She puts in more hours than anybody I've ever known, and I only hope to have as much energy as she has later in my life. She works a full-time job, and she's here 6 hours a day, 3 days a week.
Oh, wow.
So pretty much all the photos you see of the dogs are hers, and then cats are a combination of people. We would not turn down the opportunity. It's a early morning type of thing, so if we get some early birds that want to come in at 6 a.m. and learn the process, we can probably get them integrated as well.
Awesome. You guys mentioned that you have an event this coming weekend. Are there any other upcoming events, or are there any like annual events that you want to make note of? I know you have your thing in April where it's the Best in Show.
Yes.
That's in April.
I think it's May this year.
Because we pushed back a little bit.
Springtime.
Yes. So we do have our Best in Show. 52 dogs go into foster care. They get to strut their stuff and then go up for adoption. It's one of our biggest, like, most successful events of the year. We always have different events going on, and some will even just kind of randomly pop up. This weekend, we're also having promotions for cats. So any adult cat can go home with as little as $10 just pet license fee. That's it. Adoption fee is waived. And we have different other, like, little outreach events where you're not necessarily going to, like, see the animals and stuff, but you supporting those events will support us. So we've got Dog Houses of Distinction going on where 20 artists are building dog houses and then putting them up for auction. So that's going to be a really fun event. We have Dogtoberfest at Big Dog's Brewery, where you go buy little coins and a pint glass and try a bunch of different beer, and part of the proceeds go to us. We've got a Halloween costume contest in downtown Summerlin. And this is all
fall
just
is,
this.
Fall is a busy schedule.
Yeah, it's all just this, you know, kind of in this month. But you can always see on our event page, on our website, everything that's coming up. We're just constantly looking for new opportunities, new adoption, offsite adoption events to do. We're constantly doing something.
One of the big events to keep in mind is also Clear the Shelter and Maddie's Days that you see on our schedules. That is where we're able to waive adoption fees for the public. Doesn't always work for everybody. Like, there are still some people, like, I would be very happy to come pay my adoption fee the day before and not have to deal with the craziness. But it really does help us get our word out there in the community and draw in thousands of people that we wouldn't normally see on a daily basis to the shelter, process adoptions. I think Clear the Shelter last year, we did 340 some adoptions in one day. Wow. And then our last Maddie's is usually a 2-day weekend, and we did 243 in 2 days at that event.
That's awesome.
Always look for those big scale events too.
And that did remind me, I for some reason I think it got pulled off the list. What is the adoption process like, and what does the adoption fee cover?
We are in that department. We know all about this. So the adoption, we're both like, I don't know who's going to answer this one. We're used to giving our spiel so many times. Adoption fees for cats and dogs always cover the spay or neuter surgery, rabies shot, microchipping is included, at least their first round of vaccines. If they've been at the shelter more than 3 weeks, it'll include their second round. Once they leave us, you are responsible for boosters beyond that. And then we also offer a pet insurance option. It's not a free pet insurance, but they will accept our medical findings as the first visit. So you just have to sign up within the first 72 hours. So if that medical record looks nice and healthy, that's a good time to do it. So if anything pops up, it'll be covered. And then we also do give you options to see a full service veterinarian in the community. One of those options, they'll all do a wellness check, but one of them will also do $250 worth of services for very common shelter illnesses. So if they have an upper respiratory infection or parasites or something, that can get treated when they go home, because we don't want those minor little things, a runny nose or sneezing, to prevent somebody from adopting a pet if that service is going to be able to cover antibiotics for them when they go home.
Adoption fees. So for dogs, if it is a puppy, so no matter what size pup, As long as they're under 6 months, the adoption fee is $200. For adult dogs, if it is a small breed dog, it's $100. So anything under 30 pounds, anything over 30 pounds, the adoption fee is only $50. And then for the cat side, anything under 6 months, it's $75 for a kitten. If you adopt two kittens, if you decide to take two little siblings home, it's actually only $100 for both of them.
Oh,
so
nice.
It's a nice little, like a little package deal.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then adult cat, anything over 6 months is only $25.
Oh, nice.
And all of that stuff is still included.
And that gets the adult animals out as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know you guys don't do meet and greets anymore.
Correct. It's just not a conducive environment for it. A lot of the times you're not really going to see the full potential and full personality of the dogs that are here because there's so many things going on. And your dog coming from the outside kind of getting thrown into this kind of situation, they're going to be a little freaked out and like, what the heck is going on?
Especially if you got them from there and be like, why am I back here?
Exactly. So it's just not going to give you a real showing for either of the animals. And then you compound that on top of there's always that possibility that the animal coming in isn't fully vaccinated or the animal that they're meeting isn't fully vaccinated. And then, of course, there's always, you know, all the dogs can possibly have an upper respiratory infection or something that they can easily pass to your animal. So it's just more of a safety and a health concern to not do it that way. Our counselors are really, really good about talking to the potential adopters and giving them every possible kind of tip and trick on how to properly introduce the animals outside once they kind of give them a little bit of time to decompress and all of that stuff.
Like on a neutral territory.
Yes, exactly. Away from the home, away from the shelter, neutral territory, keeping them on leash, letting them kind of slowly introduce themselves to each other, and then giving them time to kind of get some energy out before bringing them into the home so that you're kind of giving them as much kind of energy expenditure outside so that they're not coming into a home all anxious. There's, you know, tons of other things that they have that they give them tips on as well. But if there's people that are like, well, I really need to know if my dog is going to get along with this dog. We do have a foster to adopt program where it's basically a 2-week trial period. You do the whole adoption process and everything, but you have 2 weeks to kind of see if this dog is going to integrate into your home the way that you want it to, if they fit your lifestyle. Within those 2 weeks, if you're like, yep, this dog's perfect, all you have to do is give the adoptions department a call. Hey, I've got so-and-so. He's doing amazing. I want to go ahead and finalize the adoption process. They will mail you the rabies tags and everything so you never have to come back for anything. If within that time they're like, you know what, it's just not really working out. My dog's not getting along with him or he's not getting along with my dog, whatever the case may be, not a problem. You bring him back, you fill out a little personality form so that we know kind of what went right, what went wrong, and we can find him a better home and you a better suited dog as well. And there's, you know, no fault for anyone. You just, now you know that your dog is going to do better with a bigger dog or with a smaller dog, whatever the case may be. And our counselors now have all the information and can use that to help both parties.
Awesome. Do you guys still do like the reunion event picnic?
I've not heard of this one. You've been gone for a while.
Yeah, like you, I went to one of them. Like you did like a picnic across the street at the park. And you invited, you know, people who, like, got their dogs from the shelter, like, come out, we're having a picnic. They had, like, some, like,
oh,
games.
Cute.
And, like, there was a person who was like, yeah, you can have your dog's paw print on a
nice.
On a thing.
We haven't, but I do like this idea.
Yeah, that's a really cute idea. We haven't sponsored anything like that. I do know that the the Pomeranians, the words that we do not speak, they actually went to this like little bar restaurant in downtown and they all got together.
Aww.
And so all the little Pomeranians got together at this place and got to kind of spend the evening with each other.
Yeah.
So I know like there's, when there's big cases like that, those kind of people turn into a little like support group for each other and have done different little reunions with each other. So that does happen. Just we haven't had to facilitate one in a long time.
We've done a lot more kind of happy tale stories that we're able to post on our social media and our websites. So we're asking for the community, tell us your amazing stories about your pets. You know, I think one of my favorite was a couple that ended up getting married, but they had each individually adopted a dog from the Animal Foundation. And then they found out as they were dating and is a cute, very cute story. They have wedding pictures with both of their little adopters. Yeah, that's so cute.
Yeah.
So there's some great stories out there.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen any of our like promotions and stuff for our fostering department for people to foster, but it's a gentleman and this little, you know, Staffordshire pity looking female dog, and she at the shelter was super scared. It took me forever to get this dog just to come out of her kennel so that I can try and walk her and work with her a little bit. She was even more scared of males. So when he came and he's like, yeah, I'll foster her, I like had this huge long conversation with him of like, you know, she's really scared and stuff. She took to him like I've never seen her take to anybody. And he fostered her for a good couple of months and ended up adopting her. So now she's like one of our best little foster stories. But they've used the two of them, Rosie and Christian, for tons of stuff. But it's really awesome to see, you know, just the impact that fostering does for some of these dogs too. So even if it's a couple of days or a couple of weeks or in their case, a couple of months, it was... Yeah.
Forever.
It's always, yeah, into forever. Yeah. It was definitely worth it.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, oh, so sweet.
I'm not sure if the question was hit on in some manner or another, but what are some future plans for the organization as of right now?
We're still working towards 2020. The goal is by the end of the year 2020 to have kind of hit all of our points that we're looking for, which is to save the lives of all healthy and treatable animals who enter our care. The construction phase of Mission Possible 2020 is completed. The only thing we're lacking is signage, which the public probably wouldn't even notice, but we notice it on a daily basis. We're very excited for some new signs to be coming in soon. And now we're working towards the actual goals of Mission Possible 2020. Beyond Mission Possible 2020, it's going to be interesting to see where we do go, because obviously the euthanasia numbers are the numbers that people are really concerned with, but you can only go so high as an open admission shelter. You're going to have ups and downs and hills and valleys, so it's really about changing your programs and making your programs work to their best of the ability to support that goal, regardless of what that number is, so that if there is euthanasia in your shelter, that it's for the right reasons. It's for the right type of animals who are suffering, not those healthy and treatable animals that we want to be caring for. So it's going to be really, I think, fun to kind of get down to the nitty gritty of it and see what we can do better. So we've already done a lot of good things, but what can we do to make it better? One of those programs is our feline program that came out of Mission Possible 2020 that didn't exist before. So we have an entire department dedicated to feline care, from neonatals to adoptions, all the way to like our feral cat population. So seeing how they're able to adjust and statistically change outcomes is really interesting.
Do you still do catch and release programs with the feral cats?
Mm-hmm. It's called a community cat program. It was originally with Best Friends. We just took ownership of the program completely through the Animal Foundation this year, and it's part of that new feline program, so they're able to manage it in-house. But yes, we trap and release community cats. That's actually one of our events that's coming up, is Dr. Hurley, kind of the cat guru of veterinary medicine, is going to be speaking at the Animal Foundation November 14th, I believe, in the evening. It'll be open to the public. So if you're interested in something like community cat programs, she'll be able to educate us a little bit more. But it definitely, that makes a huge difference in our live release numbers for cats.
And then our kitten season, we're hoping to decrease that population through our community cat program, because we're not having to worry about all these little kittens coming in by the like truckloads almost.
Literally.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you catch them, you fix them, and put it back in the...
In the community. Mm-hmm.
As long as it's a safe place to send them back to.
Because they're part of like really intricate like colonies, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, and it's hard for me as a cat person as well, because I'm like, oh, they seem so domesticated. They could be adopted. You have your feral population who really does not want anything to do with you. Yes, obviously we're going to put them back where they came from, as long as they're healthy and thriving there. And then you have your semi-domesticated cats who are still going through our catch and release program. And sometimes it's a little tough to remember there's a reason we're putting them back there, so that the population doesn't grow. It keeps other animals out of that area. But also because there's only a 4% chance that a stray cat is ever going to be reclaimed from a shelter. So they don't have a good chance of finding their owners here. They're much more likely to go back to their destination. Cats can wander for months and still get back home.
Wow.
Or you get crazy cat people that will adopt animals right off the street, like me. So if they're already spayed or neutered, they're not reproducing, they can find a positive outcome another way. So at least they have the bare minimum of what is necessary to not become a statistic in a shelter.
Awesome. And that's another way people can get involved without, you know, if they're not able to get down here and work with you guys, you're like, well, I can help catch you guys.
Exactly. You come, pick up a trap and send it back to the address that we give you. It's as simple as that. As long as you see that it's okay, this is their colony, open that thing up, let them go, and bring the trap back the next time you come. Super easy.
Awesome.
Still a way to get involved.
Are there any last comments you'd like to make or information you would like to share with the audience or the community out here in Las Vegas that we haven't touched on?
Right.
We touched on a whole lot.
We went through a bunch of stuff today. Just definitely be open to the information that the shelter is providing you. Ask questions without kind of passing judgment first, and definitely don't believe everything you read on Facebook. A lot of animal advocates are in some of our rescue pages and groups, and there's a lot of very compassionate, well-educated people out there, but there's also a lot of misinformation. I know we talked about it a little bit here today, but come to the source, ask. We'll make sure that we share our contact information for you. Myra and I would be happy to answer questions that your group or anybody else that sees this might have. Most of our staff would rather answer the same question a million times than to have one piece of misinformation out there. So please continue your education and talk to us.
Did you have anything you wanted to add?
No, but everything that she said is spot on. If you have the time or you have, a interest in helping, come talk to us. We're always open to different opportunities and different ways of people volunteering. We can't do all the things that we want to do to grow this organization and grow each of the new programs that we have without volunteer help. So even if it's a one day a week, one day every other week type thing, we're still more than happy to have you, come in and help us, because it really is something that's very rewarding at the end of the day. Even if you've got the most mundane 9-to-5 job, coming here and doing something for someone else and being of service makes you feel real good.
Everything helps everything.
Exactly. Absolutely.
And where can people get more information to get involved and contact you guys?
Animalfoundation.com is our website. We've got tons and tons of information on there. All of the applications for fostering and volunteering are on there. All of our adoptable animals are on there. It updates every 45 minutes. Same thing with any lost and found animals. Their photos are taken and uploaded within those 45 to an hour. And all of our information is on there. You wanted to contact us, we'll give you, our direct emails, phone number, all of that good stuff.
And what social media platforms are you guys currently on?
We are on Instagram. We are on Facebook.
Twitter.
Yes, we are on there. So you'll definitely see happy stories and updates and things like that on those platforms. In terms of contacting us, though, I did want to mention one of the most common issues people seem to have is nobody answered my phone call right away. It's because our staff is very busy taking care of animals. So we want to answer our phone calls. We will always return a voicemail message. So just definitely making sure that the public understands that we are very busy. We are trying to get to you, especially in those lost and found type of departments. We understand it might be urgent. Leave a detailed message and we will definitely get back to you with as much as we can. Just don't be offended if we don't answer right away.
Well, thank you guys so much. I love that we talked about everything. Probably not even everything.
Yeah, we can keep going.
did I forget to bring up anything that should be mentioned?
No, you did awesome.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for sitting down with me and sharing all this information. Hopefully we can get more people out to volunteer to you guys, bring you guys some donations in some form or another, and however anybody else people can get involved.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And thank you guys for listening. We'll see you next time. Hey everyone, thanks so much for listening to our fourth episode of our Conversations with the Community podcast. We hope you enjoyed our discussion with Robin and Myra about the Animal Foundation, what it's like in the animal rescue world, and how you can get involved with them or your own local shelter. Please check out the Animal Foundation and learn how you can help out or get involved with them and the animals there waiting for their forever homes. We've linked their various platforms in the description below. If you enjoyed this discussion, please like this video and subscribe to our channel to get notifications on new content. And please follow us on our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you want to support what we do and help us grow on our journey, please check out our Patreon community and see what benefits we offer for joining today. Thank you so much again for listening. Until next time, I'm Kat from Millennials in Motion Magazine, and this has been Conversations with the Community.